In this new era of hope and change, we discuss Swing Vote, the world's most irrelevant political satire. Welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Elliot Kalin.
And I'm Will Hines.
That's right. We have a guest because Stewart was called away to Baltimore.
Ooh. Yeah.
No doubt Stringer Bell is up to his old tricks.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Stewart's demand to stop him.
Yeah.
He had to go team up with Omar on something.
Exactly. Elliot's now started watching The Wire so he can start
making
these
jokes. I've seen the first four of the 25 discs in the series. Yeah. So
that's pretty
not so
good.
Bad, though, for yeah. 5 seasons.
That's like when it starts to get good. It requires more investment of time than any other series that's been raved about.
Oh well, I liked it from the first episode.
Oh, okay,
but it is. I can see it getting richer over time. You know, but
yeah.
But this isn't the Wirecast.
No,
this is the Flophouse.
If only this was the Wirehouse.
The Wirehouse. That sounds like a good indie band.
It does sound like a good indie band.
Okay,
guys.
Yeah.
Tonight we found the Wirehouse, the best indie band on the market.
Yep.
I call Tambourine.
Oh, so it's that kind of indie band.
We find any band and we take over for them.
So, Will.
Yes.
Let's introduce Will. He teaches at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in New York City.
That's great. I'm just curious what you knew about me.
You know,
because we've met in passing at a couple of different events, and I don't know how much information you actually picked up. But that's right. Yeah.
He's a how much information? I don't know. I know that you're a comics fan.
Yeah, that's right. I do. I love comics.
Owns cats.
He owns cats.
Yes.
He's a sketch and improv
dude. Yep.
And I was on the internet today.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw that you have a role in the upcoming film, The Mystery Team.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The
which was at Sundance.
Derek comedy. Yeah, it was at Sundance. So technically, I was at Sundance. I was viewed at Sundance.
That got a lot of good reviews from the
Onion. It's a very good movie. I have two lines of exposition. The name of my guy was Reasonable Principal. I'm not kidding. I established the main character. And then that's it. But it was really fun. I was pretty glad.
Now, I have this right. Let's see if I have it right. It's a movie about an aging team of boy detectives a la the Hardy Boys or the Three Investigators.
Right, but now they're almost out of high school and they're still solving crimes the same way, but they have to solve a murder with those techniques.
So that sounds like a
fun movie. Pretty good. I'll make that movie.
Yeah.
I've accepted your pitch.
So, I'm not pitching to you.
Well, we're in production. I'm giving it the green light.
Yeah, it's a really fun idea.
So if you
so when can I expect the script by?
I guess it's already written and shot and produced. So later tonight I could email it to you.
Right,
it doesn't matter because other people have made it and own it.
Let's
so.
Get this thing in the can. I'm you excited to be
the
working
script,
on it.
Won't matter.
This is going to be our next big production.
As your friend, you know, if you make this movie, you'll be wasting your time because somebody else owns it.
Michael Cera and Woody Harrelson.
You'll probably
if you actually
get
make
sued.
That happen, you might be able to have your movie surpass this one currently.
I think I see who else is big on the I think I can get Miley Cyrus for this.
Mm. Okay. Well,
this is a legal problem waiting to happen.
And I'm going
to
call it the Derek movie.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
About oil derricks.
Wow.
So, but...
A movie about oil derricks.
Yeah, why like Syriana.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I was going to say, why hasn't that been made before? But I guess it has.
Yep.
But we didn't watch The Mystery Team tonight. We watched Swing Vote.
Yes.
A political movie in this new era of
almost a political
change.
Fable, really, kind of.
Yeah, I would say that's about right. The only thing keeping it from being a totally fable, political fable, is that there was no magic or supernatural happening.
Right.
Wizards.
No wizards, unfortunately.
Right.
Or gnomes.
But a movie where a presidential election comes down to the vote of a single man, and you're not going to believe which man, the least likely guy.
Now, I know what you're thinking. It's obviously going to be a college professor.
Sure. Someone who's suited to
someone
make that
with
choice.
Someone an education, a historian.
Someone who reads the paper now and then.
Yeah.
Nope. No way.
Wrong again,
this is
wrong-o.
Like the worst guy. If you had to pick one guy to have a vote, this guy would be way toward the bottom of the list.
He is the last vote you would swing.
I wouldn't go that far. I mean, like, he's not a serial killer or something.
But a serial killer might have some good ideas.
A serial killer would have some focus.
Well, yeah, like, he's got an issue.
Let me just,
killing.
Just the same way the movie established the character.
But he's a
single issue.
I really vote on one issue.
Yeah.
Getting the voices in my head to stop.
Right.
Single issue voter. No good. That would be an easy guy to pander to, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I imagine a pardon, a presidential pardon would be involved somehow.
But if Charlie Kaufman wrote the movie, it would be like a multiple schizophrenic who was the one guy. It was like four different movies going on at once, each pandering to the different personalities.
Mm-hmm. Well, if he needed a pardon, that would mean he'd been convicted, in which case he's a felon.
Well, but as you pointed out, Elliot, Kevin Costner's character is a two-time felon.
And what is the name of Kevin Costner's character?
His name was Ernest Johnson.
Nicknamed Bud. The names in this movie are awesomely not imaginative in every way.
What was the name of the reporter that...
Kate Madison.
Kate Madison. His daughter's name is
Molly
Johnson.
That sounds
Molly
like a
Johnson.
Disney Channel singer, you know, like a youth.
Definitely.
Singer.
Yeah. She sounds constructed.
And the presidential candidates are Greenleaf... and I think Boone is the other
Boone,
one?
Boone, yeah.
Boone is... we should start
from... You should guess which one's the Democrat, though.
Oh, yes. Boone Greenleaf or Boone.
Greenleaf.
Will, during the movie, you couldn't remember the name of the other...
Republican,
you're like, what's his name? Money Weapon?
Yeah. I thought that was really
funny. Elliot.
Greenleaf.
You're good at quickly summing up the plots of things.
Yes.
Why don't you do that rapidly?
Sure.
You're a blurb machine.
Thank you. What blur machine activate? we're introduced to Kevin Costner. He plays Ernest Johnson. Mm-hmm. He's not very good at anything. He works at an egg factory with a lot of Mexicans and Judge Reinhold. And his daughter is very smart. She is she's like the Lisa Simpson of this two-person single-parent family.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
She's like a kid in a Neil Simon movie, but she doesn't swear.
Exactly.
If Marge and Bart and Maggie died somehow.
Mm-hmm, probably a plane crash.
Yeah.
And maybe like Marge hangs on for a couple days, but then unfortunately passes away.
Boy, that show would take a really different turn.
It's a very such a sad show.
Yeah, it's like Million Dollar Baby of sitcoms. 20 years of happiness and joy, and then the end of it, it's like, I couldn't even want to watch it anymore. No. You know, just
every episode from before that has been ruined because you can't watch it because you know what's going to happen to these characters.
Yeah.
Oh, but anyway, so Molly is a prodigy. She's very interested in politics. She's precocious. She's very precocious in the way movie kids are.
Right.
And she takes care of her dad
more than he takes care of her.
Yes.
Am I the only one who noticed that? Oh no, wait. We were reminded of that in every scene.
Oh, right, yes. And it's election day is coming up. It's 2008. Yep. Most important election of our lifetime between two white guys who one's vaguely Republican and one's vaguely Democrat.
Yeah.
And she says to him, don't forget to vote, Dad. Dad, I'm supposed to do a report on you voting.
He even runs into a sign that says, remember to vote.
He goes and drinks. Oh, shit, I'm supposed to vote today. Yeah. Runs outside, hits his head on
that
a...
That literally
a
says...
Plate. It says vote today.
Yeah.
And hits his head so hard that he has trouble getting to his car and passes out inside of it, which means he must have gotten a concussion.
Mm-hmm.
And his daughter, he's not here. Uh-oh, the voting poll is almost closed. The poll watcher is asleep. I'll just sneak in and vote for him.
Right.
Unfortunately, due to a mishap with a vacuum cleaner that knocks out an electric plug,
right,
the machine stops mid-vote. Suddenly... the entire election has come down to New Mexico's vote. They're in the town of Texaco, New Mexico.
Right.
It's split 50%, 50%. The rhymingest town around. Yeah.
Yeah.
And very implausibly, only New Mexico's electoral votes were to decide this one.
And just this county.
Every county in New Mexico is 50-50.
Right.
Including, we have to assume, absentee ballots.
Right.
And just this one vote will tip the whole thing. Well, oh, no!
As New Mexico goes, so goes the nation, Elliot.
It's literally been
the most important state in the Union.
Never, ever has it ever been an important state. Long story short, the election board comes and gets him. They tell him, you have to vote. And for some reason, they allow him to just dick around as long as he wants before he votes.
For like what seems like 2 weeks.
It's 10 days.
All right.
At the end of it, he says, it's been a crazy 10 days. The press finds
out.
He
holds the country hostage.
Intrepid local reporter Kate Madison and her very excitable boss George Lopez discover that Bud Johnson is the mystery swing vote after Chris Matthews appears on TV like 1,000 times explaining that the election is neck and neck.
Yeah.
And everyone heads to Texaco, and both presidential candidates, one of whom is the incumbent, decides to take about a week off from being president so that they can woo him. Very personally.
Well, he's a lame duck at that point.
If he wins the election.
But until it's decided. I mean, no one's going to be.
Of the amazingly high number of unbelievable things, that one's not super crazy. Okay. Like, if it did come down to one guy.
Only because we've had a president who for 8 years would just take vacations for long periods of time.
You just wouldn't believe that he would devote the whole 10 days to wooing this guy.
No, he would
take
some
time. Days off. Yeah.
This is tiring. Yeah. I'm going to take a day off to just
Well,
hang
I've
around.
Done my part.
Like, I imagine there were days when Bush just lay in bed all day, not doing, just staring at the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
reading the funnies.
They come down. Both candidates start more and more just saying whatever they think Bud wants to hear. His daughter becomes disillusioned with the political process. And
both candidates abandon their platforms and their parties
almost completely
just to pander to Bud.
Boone makes a wildlife preserve out of Bud's favorite fishing holes. Nothing happens to it. And when Bud says he's pro-life because he doesn't know what that term means,
yes.
Greenleaf, played by Kelsey Grammer, plays the conservative, and Dennis Hopper plays the liberal. Dennis Hopper gives a commercial where he's all in favor of he's very pro-life. Also, and Kelsey Grammer comes out as pro-gay marriage.
Yes, so the Republicans all of a sudden supporting gay marriage. The Democrat is anti-abortion.
Yeah. It's a crazy topsy-turvy world.
I go to the end of the movie or no?
Yeah, just jump to it.
Okay.
Quick.
After a while, they're in a very strange tangent where they go find Molly's birth mother, who's a drug addict.
Yeah, she's clearly strung out on heroin.
Yeah.
They go to Bud wants to see one last debate. So he decides to moderate a debate between the two presidential candidates. He gives a 45-minute long speech, it feels like, about what's important in America. And then he goes in to vote the next day. Pulls the curtain on the ballot booth. Molly smiles at him.
Right.
And then
a little wink to the audience.
Don't stop. Fade to black.
Right.
Or cut to black.
Yeah.
Movie's over. Who's he going to vote for?
Right.
Only you can decide, America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's your vote that counts.
Is it the cardboard Democrat or the cardboard Republican?
Yeah.
Well, it was the smartest decision they made at that point, because the best thing you want to see at that point is the movie to end.
Yeah, well,
this was a long movie.
I don't know how I didn't see that coming, the open-ended ending. Because you know, halfway through, I said that the only way that they were going to resolve this would be have one of them become the president, one become the vice president, and then switch off. Because
every year, Bud to suddenly, you know what, let's just redo the whole election, and Bud gets elected president.
Yeah, because they're both presented as basically decent candidates, the Republican and Democrat.
Yeah, the villains in this are the campaign managers, Stanley Tucci and Nathan Lane, who, you got to do what's important is winning. We got to win. I don't know why I did a Richard Nixon voice for that, but
he was Nixon-y. Every character in this movie has one job, and they do it every single line that they speak in the movie.
Constantly. We're constantly reminded, she's a precocious kid. He's a dumb guy.
Each character opens a door, storms in, and says, I am here to remind you why I'm in this film.
There's lots of plot. It's like watching an episode of Law and Order, because at the beginning of every scene, they summarize everything that's happened so far.
Yeah.
Even though the title almost summarizes the entire plot.
It could have started 50 minutes into the film, ever since I voted wrong, my life's been crazy.
Yeah.
And then maybe a two-minute flashback, and then...
Well, and that would have skimmed over some of our major problems with the movie, because...
The first hour, you're saying.
Yeah. The basic premise of this film, I don't care whether it's a comedy, I don't care whether it's a movie. The premise is unworkable, because, as we all pointed out several times through the movie, number one, it would never come down to one vote.
You're right.
You know, certainly not on election day, it wouldn't come down to one vote. There would be absentee ballots, you know.
And long before the margin of error is that small, it goes to the courts. Well,
to a recount.
Even if this movie happened before the year 2000, you might have me, because I wouldn't even know.
Yeah.
But since this actually happened in 2000, a close election, not even nearly as close as this, just went to the Supreme Court and they picked who they wanted to be president, that's what would happen. I saw it. I don't know anything, and I know that that's what happened.
I kept expecting all the characters all the characters to suddenly recover from their amnesia and be like, "What are we doing, pandering to this guy?"
And
wait, this isn't how it works.
James Carville's on TV, and he's like, it hasn't happened until the 1820s when it went to the House of Representatives. And it's like,
that's
one,
not even true.
One that happened in 1876 also, but two, then the election should go to the House of the why does this...
You are saying the plot of a smarter movie.
Yeah, exactly. Oh.
And you, Elliot, were really keen on doing this movie, mainly because you wanted to object to how it gets politics wrong.
I was I was so ready to be horrified by its factual inaccuracies.
But you were, and you were correct, too.
And I got a certain amount of fun from that, But it was just... It's weird because it wasn't the movie I thought it was going to... As often happens when we... When I'm looking forward to a movie that we're going to do, it wasn't the movie I thought it was going to be. I figured it was going to be a really wacky, over-the-top comedy.
Because you thought we were watching The Third Man tonight. You're looking forward to that.
I can't wait for Carol Reed and Graham Reed's Meditation on Good Intentions and Moral Ambiguity. Oh.
Guess what, guys? I got swing vote.
We're compelled to watch whatever you bring.
We're not watching Jules and Jim. We're watching Swing Vote. But so I thought it was going to be a much goofier movie than it was. But it was a really slow pace, not a good movie, and as you pointed out many times, a really fake-looking movie.
But it was amazing in that, the movie was high budget with talented cast, well lit, like just well produced. Like if you didn't speak English and you walked through the room when it was going on, you'd glance at the screen and be like, "That's probably a good movie," and you'd keep going.
Oh, una película buena.
Yes, but every single moment, especially in the first half of the movie, rang so untrue. Like in the way of like when they show a bunch of guys in a bar, it doesn't look like a real bar. It looks like a bunch of actors in a bar set.
Yeah.
Are you telling me that Judge Reinhold is not convincing as a backcountry egg employee?
I'm telling you, worse than that. Not only was Judge Reinhold not – Judge Reinhold actually was the most convincing redneck, and all of the Mexican extras in the background looked like a bunch of guys with SAG cards. Like they just did – it just – everything looked sort of like
it was the
charades version. Like, oh, give me two syllables and I'm going to try to portray to you what somebody looks like when they're in a bar.
They'd go through like the main street of the town and it was like, okay – they put up enough buildings to make it look kind of like the main street of it. Even like a dying southwestern town would have a few more buildings. Mm-hmm. Like the main street wouldn't literally be like 50 feet long. You know?
There's something in the details of it that you could tell it wasn't real. Like nobody thought on any level.
Although if there's women out there who really wanted to see Judge Reinhold in a mullet mustache. And a big mustache.
This is the movie.
Yeah,
the weird thing was I still like Judge Reinhold.
No,
stupid dialogue, useless part.
Likeable.
And at the end of every line, like the front part of my brain would be like, that was stupid. And my lizard brain was like him. Relate to him. Enjoy him. He good. He sure. good.
But this movie reminded me a lot of the movie Bridget Jones' Diary, which has the same feel of like, this feels like it's taking place entirely in an unreal world. Everything's gets professionally
done. That's a good comparison because that movie could have been pretty good, I think. But it was like fake at every turn. It's like, this is an office in quotes. And
I
here
still
is
don't
the
think
boss,
it would have been very good. But like there's a part where Hugh Grant and Colin Firth like get into a fist fight out on in the street.
In the street,
and
yeah.
there's nobody in the street. It's deserted.
And the snow is beautiful.
Yeah,
actually, that movie was ruined by the soundtrack.
Like I'm like the one defender of Bridget Jones's Diary.
I don't like that movie.
I read the book, and I don't remember why, and that's a whole I don't even know. But I thought the book was funny. Saw the movie, and it wasn't funny.
Mm. I mean, I'm all for artificiality in a movie. Like, I saw...
Like Gremlins?
Gremlins.
Gremlins
even,
is deliberately even makes
Gremlins
it look like it's in a backlot.
No, that's the thing. The houses and things in Gremlins look like real houses.
Yeah, but I mean, well...
But even like a movie
But it's
like,
obviously also a conscious choice. They're like, I'm going to make this look like the old horror movies that I grew up with.
Yeah, kind of. Well, it's the idea of a small town, but at least the rooms look like rooms people live in, and it's lit like maybe light would actually look in real life.
Yeah.
You know?
You think that they carted in light from some...
I think they bottled light from the outside world, and then they opened the bottle in it.
Well, some movie... Rushmore is a movie that has an otherworldly feel at every turn.
Anderson movie, yeah.
It doesn't feel like the real world at all, and it's not... naturalistic. It's
but
like
it
stilted
like,
and it looks like it, this is a movie. This was arranged and art directed by an obsessively weird dude. But like it fits the story and it helps.
Whereas this, the premise is so crazy that you need like the other things to be realistic feeling. And they aren't.
Right to the names. Kate Madison's a reporter. Bud. My nickname's Bud. The most stupid nickname that nobody really has.
Well, also like
They call me Fishbone. You know?
Yeah. Like, I don't understand like the thinking behind Ernest Johnson. They're like, okay, we want people to know this character's sincere,
so we'll call him
Ernest.
And he's
right.
an everyman.
And then we'll give him a name that means penis for his last name.
I feel like it was like a bunch of producers came up with the idea for the movie, but then the scriptwriters never changed any of the specifics they came up with. Like, we'll change this. This is stupid. Let's say his name's Ernest. Okay, whatever.
Let's just call him like Greenleaf. It's not that. Not
it's someplace
that,
in New Mexico. I don't care. Let's go Texaco, New Mexico. Doesn't matter. Call it whatever you want. You know.
He works in like an egg factory. Something.
Reporter comes up and she's like little Miss Prim and Proper. Oh, Madison Avenue. Like Kate Madison. All right. Well, take that out. That's crap. But
egg factory. That's a blue collar job, right?
It's quirky. Put it in. Yeah, a lot of egg factories.
And so
Texas.
But there were parts that we did like. The movie overall, it starts out as a really boring comedy.
Super heavy-handed.
Then it becomes...
On the exposition.
Very heavy-handed exposition. Then it becomes a really boring, heavy-handed drama about the importance of nobility in politics, I guess.
Yeah, and then there's
when the candidates are betraying themselves. And then this weird personal drama of the dad and the daughter... But that was kind of good, right? Like, it was like a different movie.
Yeah,
the
daughter runs away to her birth mother. I mean, birth mother. She doesn't have a stepmother. But she runs away to her mother's, and it's Mara Winningham, and like there's this whole like mini
it's heartbreaking
movie,
yeah,
where it's like, this is clearly a woman who has had substance
this
abuse
daughter
problem.
Wants the mother to be a good mom, and she knows she can't,
and in the audience, and we were saying this multiple times, like, how much of a fuck up does that woman have to be
to
that
be a
Kevin
worse
Costner
parent than,
has
yeah.
yeah has custody,
but he's only cartoon bad, like he sleeps in a hilarious way and cracks open a beer right at 8 yeah. o'clock,
but
and
she's real bad, like
she's like for real scary,
I
like
bet
The
he
Wire
a lot of time in the drunk tank down.
Yeah, like with a big key on the wall, and the sheriff lets him out to answer the phones. That's the world he's living in this movie.
There's a big fat sheriff sleeping with his chair tilted back.
And like Costner comes out, locks himself in the cell, and then, I got it, Sheriff. Don't worry about me.
He's using a broom handle
to
try to get
my
the key ring off of the wall. And meanwhile, like Mayor Winningham is giving guys blowjobs for crack. Like, it's a different, but like, it hinted at a much better movie that this could have been if it had nothing to do with the presidential election.
It's
like, it was just about a guy and his daughter, and, you know, they have to get along, and she's too smart for him.
Right. So it was weird to see how it was bad and how it was good, because another part of the that
there was
made
another
really
part
bad.
That was
the other good part was the or that I liked.
Oh,
a lot
did, what,
the,
what were we gonna say that was bad?
The over explaining, like the over indicating early in the movie when it's revealed to the world that there's this one guy who has the vote and they found out who it is. They cut to somebody in a news station watching Kevin Costner come out of his trailer, and in the news station, he turns around to his manager and goes, "I don't believe it." Or what is it like?
I don't remember.
Oh, he says something like, it can't be this guy. Or it's like.
But then later, like, there's all this press in town, and Molly Logo's like, "This is getting weird."
Yeah, as if talking right to the audience. In case you fell asleep.
For in case you this
entire
this is how
movie,
life is.
Yeah.
It's not.
This part of the movie is pretty weird. You might as well look right at the camera. Why not even go all the way?
What
look
is
right
zany,
at the audience and be like, this seems pretty premise. Meaningful.
But the good thing about it was they show these ads that the presidential candidates are making to appeal to Bud, and they're like, it's like they hired a college sketch group to like do these scenes for the movie. Like, they're really funny and crazy.
So over the top that I loved them.
He's like, I don't like that people are losing their jobs to Mexicans. And so Dennis Hopper is striding towards the camera through a desert as illegal immigrants just run past him.
At top speed, racing a horde of Mexicans
cars
behind
with
him.
Sirens chasing after. And he's acting as if he's oblivious to what's going on around him.
Yeah. Right. So the idea of a Democratic president giving an anti-immigration ad might have been the point they're trying to make that was funny. But the real funniness was just how insanely over the top that commercial was.
Where he does the thing about abortion's bad, and he's standing in front of a playground full of children, and the children begin exploding in puffs of smoke.
Right.
And disappearing.
Colored best anti-abortion.
And then at the end, he holds up a ball and he says something about intelligent design. The ball turns into the earth. Like,
it was
just
great.
Really over
it was
the
really
top.
Funny. I guess maybe what I'm thinking of as ham-handed exposition was just over the top, but at a part where I needed the movie to be real.
Yeah.
Like when he first walks out of his trailer to discover the press, and there's not just like a crowd of like 8 to 10 reporters outside of his door. There's
just like 200.
200 or 300 reporters.
And they have huge,
with huge floodlights.
Huge lights that don't go. He opens the door and goes, is there somebody out there? And suddenly,
goosh. It's like, dark at first, and then once he opens, the lights come on. They waited for him to surprise him like it was a birthday party from the press corps.
Shh. Eventually he'll go outside.
Yeah.
And then we'll start yelling questions
they
at
weren't,
him.
They weren't making – there was a huge, huge crowd. They weren't making any noise until Kevin Costner opened the door.
This,
and then they're turn the lights on. Everyone start talking.
This has to do maybe with the theory that you had, Will. It made the movie a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, I believe that Kevin Costner – it's never said explicitly, but that everybody in the movie is inanimate unless being looked at by the main character. That everybody is completely still until Costner looks at him, the camera pans over, then they can come to life and move.
There's a part, Kate Madison has an American Indian cameraman, and she's eating dinner with Kevin Costner and Molly. And
but you don't see the cameraman, you just see this little
You just see the three of them together, and she's like, maybe I can interview you? And Kevin Costner's like, oh, all right. And suddenly he looks over and the camera pans over and the Indian is just sitting there holding the camera in the chair and then suddenly gets up real quick, points the camera at him, and you were like, oh, that guy was inanimate until Kevin Costner looked right at him.
He was a statue until Costner used his life-giving rays that came out of his eyes.
It's definitely a thesis that, you know, has support in the text. It's like a remake of It's a Good Life, sort of.
That's what it's like It's a Good Life, but not as good and without, you know, the human Jack in the Box.
I think it's fun when watching these movies to decide what you'd have to do at this point to make it a genuinely good movie. What would have to happen to save it? And like the further you go along, the harder that is.
Yeah. but this theory improves the movie greatly.
I think it saves it.
Although the idea that I wish that it ended with him choosing the president and then the president starting a nuclear war, and there's just a shot of Kevin Costner going, better luck next time, as a mushroom cloud goes off behind him. You know.
Well,
I guess I made the wrong swing vote.
Yeah. The one that you guys were talking about was there was a point in during Kevin Costner's 10-minute monologue.
45 minutes.
He has a long speech that he gives.
Where he talks about the letters he received.
This is a movie where importance is signified by people bringing bags and bags of letters.
Yeah, it's like Miracle on 34th Street, but bad.
Right.
But,
I wish I could see when that judge got lost his license as a judge.
Yeah.
You know,
excuse me, why did you say in the law now, the American law, that man is Santa Claus? That's your responsibility.
Now you've set the precedent that if anyone gets a lot of mail, that means...
Just that they have to prove that a lot of mail was sent to somebody. That means that someone must exist.
Bernie Madoff has like 10 million letters. Innocent, cared of Bernie Madoff, and they got delivered to him.
There's precedent, you know. Yeah. What were your grounds for this, Judge? I'm just crazy. I don't know.
But the one that you guys were saying was during that long speech, he's like, I got all your letters, and they touched me. And you, Elliot, said, in my butt. And then the movie should have cut there. Like, it was a big, shaggy dog.
It was an hour
story.
And 45 minutes set up just so you could say, in my butt, at a surprising moment.
A huge bait and switch. He says, right, seriously, in my butt. And then you just see him real quick glance off camera, see? And then...
Boom, yep.
Like, so
all
that,
the credits in 15 seconds
end.
Black.
With music like this. But he wants you to know that he knows it's a joke. And he knows he just wasted 2 hours of your time.
If they did that and then they actually took the real snippets from reviews to use in their advertising, all the would be like, what? No, really? The first weekend that movie would sell out everywhere.
Yeah. You'll never guess how it ends.
There would be rioting in the theaters. It would be like the
riot
of spring.
Dadaist would show up and be like, finally! They would like be super excited.
The ending bears out the rest of it. But it's a movie that takes its time going nowhere.
Go ahead, Dan.
No, I'm just going to say, like, for a movie that is ostensibly some sort of political satire, or at least a movie about politics at all, the political characters, you have no idea what either of the candidates stand for.
Except for, like,
generic Republican, generic.
Yeah, generic.
There's, like, generic unemployed people, generic reporter, nothing.
Yeah. They have this fear of doing any actual satire in this movie.
The Republican is kind of dumb, and the Democrat is kind of, weak or spacey or nervous. Like, phrase I used to describe the David Mamet film State and Maine, where I call it gumming satire. Like, it's not biting satire. It's, like, gently gumming its victims to the point where it's kind of massaging
them. Making fun of the film industry, right?
Whenever they make fun of the film industry or politics,
I think it's so hard to be, like, specific enough and big enough to be funny because the real world that we see every day
is already
so crazily heightened.
But, like, in State and Maine, it's like, we're really going to give it to the film industry, except everyone who works for it is nice. They're all good people.
Right.
And this was kind of like that. You know?
Well, we do know that Kelsey Grammer is anti-cancer. That's the one policy.
Yes, that's true. He hints at an anti-cancer initiative.
Yeah.
And he likes ice cream, he mentions at one point.
Yep.
I feel like what they did in this movie was they had a pretty good cast, and there were a lot of moments that in the midst of being bored out of my mind and waiting for this thing to pick up and just being unsurprised at every moment and having the exposition summarized for me, then all of a sudden a moment would happen and I would like smile or I'd laugh. And I think it's because the actors are good. And I feel like what they did was they made these scenes long and slow with the intention of, let's give these actors time to like react to each other and have some real moments and it'll save this terrible script.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, all it did was make its terrible script take forever to get to its ending.
Yeah.
It didn't really work.
It's not, and I don't know who wrote it or how many drafts it went through or whose hand was in it.
The director wrote it.
But it's not a very good, I'll blame him. But well, it's not a very good script.
Well, and you know,
And it's not The Happening bad, but it's, you know, not good.
I remember when this came out, like, there was a web series that a friend of mine...
Oh, because I don't remember when this came out. I was like, swing vote, I can't wait till that comes out so we can do it on the Flophouse. And then I looked at the ad closer, I'm like, oh, it came out a week ago.
Yeah.
Oh, it's already out of the theaters.
Well, but the only reason I was aware of it was a web series that a friend of mine and I did. I wrote a script for it. It was about, like, two guys...
You can
two
say the
space.
Name of your...
It was called Captains in Space. It was about
it's
two guys
podcast,
in space.
Advertise your things on it.
Well, it's basically done now, but... The point was, I wrote an
and
episode.
It's the internet, so that stuff is gone.
Yeah.
Once you post it on the internet, it expires.
Things are only on the internet for one day.
But
that's
I was like,
great about it.
Well, what if there was an episode where there was an election for president of space, and the idea was everyone in space had to vote, except for these three people didn't vote, and so the president of space, played by, in this case, Sarah Schaefer, who has guest hosted on the Flophouse before, comes in and panders to these people.
Wasn't she up against a toaster?
Yeah. A toaster was the other candidate.
That would have made this movie better.
Well, here's the thing.
Not that Dennis Hopper was bad, but if he was a toaster with Democratic leanings, I would have been paying a lot more attention.
But it talks. Like,
yeah.
The toaster and Captain Space
didn't
talk.
We gotta do something about the water!
It was just the toaster shaking around. You know, it's like, oh, we're down in the bowls. What are we gonna do?
But the point was, in that case, the absurdity was part of it. I'm like, okay, this is it.
Yeah, you're not trying to do a politically
premise.
Super incisive.
Yeah,
like,
no, it's like,
maybe the
in the infinity of space, the idea that everyone voted except for a couple people—that's the absurd,
that's
ridiculous
that's
thing. But here they're trying to play it as if like, oh, but that's the jumping off point for.
Maybe they wrote like an incisive drama, then they did those political ads first, and they were so funny. They're like, you know what? Let's just blow the lid off this thing, man. We're going to make another airplane. Every step of this movie is going to be a slapstick wonderland.
And then halfway through, they got cold feet.
Yeah, and they're like, nope, put some speeches in.
Let's make sure people know that we are Americans.
Crackhead mom, crying daughter, let's crank this thing up.
It was such a weird... It was
heartbreaking, man. I was impressed that scene worked in the middle of this.
Yeah.
Like, bring that scene back to its mothership movie. Like, wherever the movie is, that thing came
which
from.
Which is probably called, like, Nowheresville. You know, something like that. Or
something horrible.
Broke Downtown. You know,
Kramer versus called, Terms of Choice or something.
Rush.
The saddest movie ever.
Kramer versus Kramer. There's a movie that I don't get. But anyway.
I saw it when I was 10. It works then.
Well, the thing is, like, thinking back on it now, I'm like, there's not really very much going on. It's like, how is this dad going to figure out how to take care of a kid?
He did.
Oh, he did it. Oh, that's right, because parents take care of children. All right.
You're bad at first, you do it again and again, you get better. We're people, we learn.
The mother comes back, and then he makes a very good case that she's not a reliable mother.
Yeah.
It was like, you know. Even though this movie preceded the other one, it was as if they were like, let's take Mr. Mom and turn it into a drama.
Yeah.
Take that, Kramer versus Kramer.
Ugh, yeah. Thank God. Someone's finally got
sure
the guts.
Doesn't,
Costner was too dumb at the top. He's an interesting sort of dumbness. He definitely reads as dumb in everything he does, I think.
Yeah,
but
well,
like,
he's never a smart guy.
They
except
were really...
for when he played Louis Pasteur.
They really put
in a movie called Milk, strangely enough.
Yeah, badly named, turns out. You wouldn't think so.
They were like, this movie should really be about Harvey Milk, shouldn't it?
Especially because they were like, it was all about homogenization. So they're like, if you're a homo, you're going to love Milk. So it really like misadvertised itself in every way, unfortunately.
But yeah, Kevin Costner never plays. He's better when he's playing a guy who is not
it's
an
like
idiot,
simple,
but he's not smart necessarily.
Right. He's like a lowbrow, like wise. Bull Durham was the perfect pitch for him. Like the well-read baseball
no
player.
No pun intended.
Oh, right. God, that's horrible of me in some way.
Bull Durham was the best wolf dance for him. But that's that when he tries, he's one of those actors who I feel like he wants to like show some sort of range, but then he's like, uh-oh, that didn't work. I better go back to what I know. But each time he goes back to it, he's forgotten how to do it a little bit.
Yeah.
And then he becomes, you know, stupid over time.
The whole first conversation with his daughter where, you know, she's like, you got to vote. And he's like, who's running again? It's like, you know who's running for president.
You think
give
for
me a break.
That it's Larry the Cable Guy.
Yeah.
As the
what's
dad
pro-life mean? Which one's that? It's like, come on. Did you get your shoes on your feet? Like, I don't care how not into politics you are.
You know what those
just
words mean.
Just by simple repetition.
Slightly.
Yeah. You know who's running for president.
America?
What month is it? November? What?
Are you sure
ain't that many syllables in a month?
It's 2008 AD. I thought Christ hadn't been born yet.
Yeah.
He knows what it's an abbreviation for, but he doesn't know what year it is.
Anno
that
Domini?
Would fit this movie, though, because he'd be brilliant and he'd be like the wise old guru in one sentence, and then be just like, he'd be like,
well, I don't know, seems like them guys ain't really sticking to their principles. Pizza! Like,
yeah.
It's a push door?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
You're right, Molly. I should be a better father.
I guess politicians just don't always do what they say they're going to do. It's like, wow, this movie's really out there. I figured that out when I was one.
Okay, well, let's...
So what do we do here now, Dan?
We've
I'm
talked
a guest.
A while.
Do we vote?
Yeah, we vote.
It's swinging.
It comes down to...
I wish swing vote was the story of Tarzan running for president.
We should vote and leave it up just to one of us.
Well, there are three of us, so if there's a tie, I don't think...
Oh, man.
I guess you're both going to have to pander to me for your vote, since I assume you guys are
for 10 days. Opposed. Yeah.
Well, that's the other thing. Let me just say one thing before we vote. They give him 10 days before the debate, not even before he votes.
Right.
Like, if I was the government, I'd be like, listen, you need to vote right now.
Right.
Just tell us who you're voting
for. We'll give you 24 hours.
You're throwing America into a panic.
But instead, he's like, I guess I'll vote when I'm good and ready. And they're like, oh, you got us over a barrel swing vote? There's nothing we can do.
Like, I don't get that
choice. There's literally no other way that we can decide this election.
We all have a 12-hour window to vote. The normal voting. Yeah. The ones who work on time.
Everyone else in America was able to vote on a specific day, but this guy has outsmarted the calendar.
Yeah.
You know,
and
he's going to have to wait till he's
ready. Because in America, anything that stops you from voting, we will not stop until everyone who wants to vote has had a chance. There's no history of impeding votes in this country.
No, not at all.
Never. Or making it inconvenient or difficult.
This is what we were saying before about like the idea that this is a made-up universe for Kevin Costner, because he's maybe, you know, constructed a world where he's the most important person in it.
Yeah.
And everyone has to bow down to him.
Yeah.
Right. He's the Twilight Zone kid that's ordering everybody around.
Yeah.
Even
all comes back to it.
Willie Nelson or what was the name? What was the race car driver who was in it?
Richard Petty.
Richard Petty.
This movie.
Big names.
I want to say this again. I think this movie was pitched in 1989. And all the references they pitched then remain in the final script. Because I don't think Judge Reinhold, Willie Nelson,
Richard Petty.
Those are, this movie's a
while
ago.
Waiting for them to start watching The Cosby Show.
Where's the beef?
Where's the beef, yeah. I guess my question is, where's the beef? Yeah! Woo! Yeah!
Politics. Anyway.
What you just said was more biting than
this. The categories are
potpourri. Notable quotables, potent potables, and potent rotables, scrotum botables, and shopen goatables.
Shopen goatables, I clean up on. You want me in your.
Repeat the categories, Alex? No, I can't.
Wait. Chopin goatables?
Chopin's goatables.
I thought it was Chopin goatables.
Chopin goatables.
You made it made more sense.
We play a Chopin song, and you tell me how well the goats reacted to it. On a scale from 1 to 5 goats.
We have assembled a musical scale of these goats.
Yeah. I say 3 goats, Alex. No, it was 2. You're wrong.
What is the minute waltz for goats? All right, we'll give it to you.
You said goats.
You said goats. That's all you were looking for.
Oh, man.
Chopin goatables.
I'm going to pitch this show.
Hey, kids. Tired of eating the bad old cafeteria food? Try some goatables. Chopin goatables. Mom, can I get Chopin goatables?
I think you've had enough Chopin goatables for today, Billy.
They're the goatablest. Oh, what a product. Anyway,
kid tested, farmer approved. Oh my god, this is the strangest joke that
this
done
is
on
even
the show.
Stranger than the Teddy Grahams thing. Oh, oh, but we gotta vote, right?
Yeah. The categories are:
okay,
is this a good bad movie? A movie that you recommend to watch with friends for a few larfs?
Right.
A bad movie.
Mm-hmm.
One that has no entertainment value, or a movie that maybe you like a little bit.
Okay.
So,
I have my vote.
As the guest, I'll turn to you first, Will.
This is a bad movie.
All right.
It's too slow and boring despite the few moments that are okay. That's my vote.
Yeah, I'm going to agree on that. It comes close to almost working.
How am I going to break this tie? My swing vote's going to come into play.
No, that's not how it works, Ellie. We both... it comes close to working a few times, and there are a few scenes that are amusing, but overall... And it's the fucking thing's 2 hours long. You don't need 2 hours for this premise.
No, yeah. Not at all. I agree with you guys. And the times when the movie worked for like 30 seconds made me hate the rest of it more.
Right.
Because it's like... You people are capable of it, like the same way that like if a bad kid in class gets a D, the teacher's like, "What are you gonna do?"
Right.
And if a good kid gets a D, she sits him down and is like, "What's going on at home? Like this is unacceptable."
Yeah.
Like it could have been much better, and there are little flashes of that, but it just makes the rest of it look that shittier, you know.
Well, maybe Kevin Costner will he's a new actor and he's still figuring this thing out, and
maybe he'll get his stride.
Yeah.
So right now, I've got a few letters from listeners that I want to address. First of all,
dear Santa,
this one is actually from my eldest brother.
I just want to say that these correspondences do prove that you exist.
Yeah,
You can't write a letter to someone who doesn't exist.
This is from Rob, last name withheld. I think you can guess it.
Your brother, Dan McCoy?
Yeah. He okay. says, first of all, he's disappointed in me that I was unaware that Thailand has a king. He says his
name... Oh, yeah, we talked about that a lot.
His name, of course, is Yule Tu. And he commends you, Elliot, that he says that you're correct that the Bloody Valentine... he calls it the Bloody Valentine. My Bloody Valentine is technically in four dimensions.
Thank you.
He says he's holding out for the sequel, My Bloody Valentine 5D... The Tesseract. A new dimension tesseract. In horror. So there you go.
I think he spelled it wrong. It's Tesseract.
But that's every movie is in three dimensions. So a three-dimensional movie is four dimensions. Because the
that's
dimension
right.
of time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, it's annoying.
It's really... Wow. It's that's the kind of thing that
correction.
Made me an unpopular kid.
Yeah, pointing out that kind of thing is not going to win you
by
in a conversation.
The way, you mean Frankenstein's monster. Frankenstein was the name of the scientist. Ow! Ow! Stop! Why are you hitting me?
Don't put me in the locker.
I think we've addressed this before, but I think that this is the reason why you came on The Daily Show to correct Jon Stewart
about
Wolverine. About
Wolverine, yeah. Because I'm an irritating person.
Right.
And this one is from... someone who's not related to me. It's from
you, Dan really McCoy.
Yeah, Jeremiah, last name withheld.
Mm-hmm.
I think I probably know that last.
Dear Flophouse, I've been at,
Jeremiah
well,
Johnson.
You can yep. well, you can read the name from where you sit.
That
so.
Makes it easier.
So he says,
"That's who I thought it was."
I've been enjoying your podcast. It's hilarious, Bangkok hilarious. I have a movie to recommend, although it may fall out of your intended scope, 13 Days starring Kevin Costner and his Boston accent. It does fall out of our scope.
It's a little old,
but I think that it was good that we read this
yeah,
right now because we did our Kevin Costner movie. But he has several postscripts. P.S. On the blog, I would enjoy seeing pictures of the Flophouse crew watching movies.
You okay. would not enjoy that as much as you think you would.
Yeah, you I think you would.
There's a picture.
Well, it's sort of inactive. It's not.
I think
not
there's
a lot
one
of...
picture on there of us sitting on a couch, mm-hmm. and there's it's exactly like that for 2 hours. There's no motion or anything.
Right.
You know.
My wife is the one who does
magic.
The photos.
You never want to see like Hawkeye's dad. Like there's certain people that you never want to see.
Yeah.
All my references are 70s. Is that cool? I can throw off this?
All right, I guess. Yeah. yeah.
Wait.
It's like Barney Miller's wife. You don't ever want to see.
You're talking about the movie Magic starring Anthony Hopkins and a ventriloquist dummy?
No,
William Goldman's... Oh, I forgot to tell you about that, Dan. About I met William Goldman last week. But I'll tell you about that later.
Did he script doctor something and then take a large sum of money to
certainly
keep quiet
don't,
about it but then
no,
tell everybody anyway?
Don't talk about it on the podcast. An interesting
that would be
story
uninteresting.
About
yeah.
Nobody wants to hear about my
screenwriter.
Meeting. Famous screenwriter William
yes,
Goldman.
Yes, let's go back to our theories about what they were thinking on the set of Swing Goat.
But what were we talking about?
No, I'm just
Jeremiah
oh,
Johnson.
Yeah, pictures of we should do like a fumetti of us watching the you had like your Christmas thing, holiday thing was kind of a mini fumetti. So.
Yeah, no, I think that we'll get some photos. My wife is the one who takes the photos. She was not here tonight. Also, Stuart was not here, but I think in the future we should get some more pictures. He says PPS or PSS actually.
PP.
No, PP is right.
PPS, yeah, postscript.
Well, but
yeah,
he,
postscript
he,
script.
He actually puts postscript
oh.
here.
Come on, Jeremiah.
If, while watching a movie, you guys, the Flophouse 3, were bombarded with cosmic rays and bestowed with superpowers based on everyone's Flophouse style of commentary, what would those superpowers be? And would you use your powers to combat the makers of the movies you review? And how would you react to a public that feared you because of your superpowers?
I wish I was a regular member of this panel because I get up every morning hoping to be asked
well,
questions
no.
like this.
I think that we'll open this to Stuart when he's back. But
I think
Will,
Stuart will be a character
you...
called The Stash, and his ability is to wear tiny pants that don't really hide his junk. Mm-hmm. And to know when boobs are around.
That's good. Will, you're a big comics fan, so I feel like you can jump in on this. I don't think that we need to exclude you
as
a co-host.
Yeah.
So to answer myself first? Okay. Well,
yeah, sure.
Okay, I'd be some kind of bird costume.
Okay.
Hopefully an endangered species like an eagle or a condor.
Okay.
And my ability would be to interrupt and to say somebody else's idea as they were saying it. That my superpower would be.
I think I would be something called like the librarian or the professor.
I can see that. The professor librarian.
I would have an entirely tweed sort of unitard.
And a pipe.
A tweed unitard. He's got elbow patches on that unitard.
Incredibly uncomfortable.
Mr. God, it scratches. Like, oh my God, I'm chafing.
They
like
call
crazy.
Me Mr. Chafe.
Yeah. And my power would be to be consistently.
I hope you have calamine lotion on the inside of that costume.
consistently avoid matching others in their quips because I'm concerned about keeping the show on track.
You'd have a subtle voice of authority that fails to keep us in line.
Time for the next bullet point, you'd say.
Mm-hmm. And I'd be Chatterbox, the joker of the group, even more nasal and annoying than I am in real life. Or the corrector, the referencizer.
The asterisk. Yeah.
The asterisk, that's a good one. Yeah. I think I'd be called Chatterbox.
I don't think that's
and my adorable. And my cost, and I'd have like those wind up teeth. I'd have one in each, one in each hand, and I'd go like point them at people.
You irritate the criminals back into jail.
Exactly.
Oh God, I'd rather be in jail.
Not another moment.
You give people like a minor rash by those chattering teeth biting their arms.
Ow, ow, those teeth! And stop talking about Mishima: chafing. A Life in Four Chapters.
Wow, like, Paul Schrader, people.
It's rare that I don't think about that movie ever since I saw it. It's a good movie.
It's good.
It's really good.
I don't think I've ever seen any of his movies. I mean, I saw Taxi Driver, but not like movies directed.
Of the ones I've seen these directed, I like this one the most. It's much better. It's
Autofocus was the
Autofocus,
one.
The Referencer.
Blue Bleed Collar. Wow. Yeah. He's done some good ones, but Mishima's the only one I saw where I was like, by him, where I was like blown away by it.
I like Blue Collar a lot.
Blue Collar's not bad.
That's
the one in there's a book called What Happens Next, which is supposed to be a history of Hollywood screenwriting, and it's a pretty good book, but it like skips a lot at times. But it talks about Paul Schrader directing Blue Collar and almost or definitely breaking down in tears on the set because Richard Pryor and Yaphet Kotto hated each other so much and would argue. And Richard Pryor turning to him and going, "Are you going to be a man or are you going to be a pussy?" when Paul Schrader is like in tears on the set of his own movie. So he's an interesting character, Paul Schrader. He didn't see a movie till he went to college, I think. His family was very religious and they wouldn't let him go to the movies.
Really?
Yeah.
Why are people good at things? Right in front of me like that. That is annoying that he
I don't know.
Started so late and then was that awesome.
I don't know that Paul Schrader is rubbing it into your face.
I think he might be a little bit. Not me directly, but just the world at large.
Yeah. Hey, I just saw movies like 5 years ago. I did this.
And I'm making them.
You don't face so hard. Richard Pryor called me a pussy. What do you get at? Take that.
I think he's definitely rubbing
That's a really abrasive Paul Schrader.
know what? I'm making a movie called Autofocus. You shove it up your ass.
From all accounts, Paul Schrader is a fairly abrasive character.
I'm going to fucking make an Exorcist prequel.
What? Would you make?
It's going to be taken away from me.
And reshot completely. Fuck you.
Fuck you, Rennie Harlan.
My movie got taken away from me. I don't care. I'm Paul Schrader! Movies are easy. That's like what it says. When you
That's
go
why
to
I don't
office.
Care. It's like I pooped that out.
Top
That's
of the world, man.
Oh, I sneezed. There's a movie. Whatever.
But to go.
You become Cody Jarrett from Whitey.
Sure, why not? But to briefly go back to the question, I don't think that we would combat the makers of those movies. I think that the movies would give us our powers.
Yeah, we would gain powers from movies and feel really depressed that people feared and hated us and probably like sulk and sit in our dark rooms.
People may fear and hate us based on the numbers for this podcast.
Oh, we get at least a listener.
No, it's fine. It's fine. But I would like to recommend that people tell people about the podcast and sign up on iTunes and write a review. The Flophouse Podcast at blogspot.com. Anyway.
Unless you're Paul Schrader.
Hey, I heard your podcast. It's garbage. I'm going to make it. First of all, I never heard a podcast until 2 weeks ago.
I'm going to shit a podcast.
Way better.
I could do it in my sleep.
I just did one
right now.
I got a podcast right now. Easy.
It's great.
It's dramatic. It'll whip the heart out of your face.
My podcast will explode in your ears.
Schrader out.
You've been Schraderized.
This is the Schrader speaking. Talk to
me. What does he sound like? I don't have any idea.
I don't know.
I imagine he's a much calmer
he's
man.
He's very soft and thoughtful. I doubt that he's like that. Like,
I just like the idea of him answering the phone. Schrader here, talk to me. You got the Schrader.
Hang on. I got to stop talking to him. I just got an amazing, heartbreaking idea I got to write down.
Oh, my God.
You're going to cry your face off when you see this movie.
I wish,
it's like the American Soul, but it's coming out of my butt crack.
I wish there was a big enough audience that I could do a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles sketch where they have to fight the Schrader. Their villain is Paul Schrader, but
oh
he's a ninja.
Oh my God, have you seen Elliot's new comedy show? The parody of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Paul Schrader?
That'll be right up there.
Plays to an audience of four people.
With my sketch I told you about once, Dan, where Sinclair Lewis is Grandpa Al Lewis is dead. And Sinclair Lewis is so mad because he's like, "Listen, I'm a famous author. Do you know how old it makes me feel that my son is named Grandpa Al Lewis?"
That's what I like about it. Is
I wrote Elmer Gantry. You're a vampire on television.
Yeah, he's more mad about like what it says about his age and less about, like, he's like, you are ruining the family name
the Lewis
by
name.
Appearing on this monster-based
A
sitcom.
Lot of Elliot's comedic sketches require that an amazing science fiction device be true, but that no one in that universe is concerned with the science fiction device.
Well, yeah, they also require an amazing spectrum of references, yeah. like both Sinclair Lewis right. and Grandpa Al Lewis.
I want Samuel J. Tilden to be having a conversation with Howard Dean Stanton.
Howard Dean Stanton?
Oh, I mixed that up.
That would be no, but that'd be great. We're like, we're going to Paris. We're going to Texas.
Paris, Texas.
Oh, right.
Harry Dean Stanton. I forgot the real guys.
There's one last. There's one last postscript or a postscript script script.
I wish I could do a TV show where Harry Dean Stanton traveled through time, just talking to people.
Hey, how you doing? No one would be thrown.
Everyone.
He blends. He's an everyman.
Yeah, everyone's voice is the same in your universe.
Oh, I don't
how you doing?
Yeah.
I'm Harry Dean Stanton.
I'm an improv actor, non-parallel. I've gotten through 10 years of improv doing no characters. I have loud, and I have not talking.
Stand on the back wall.
There was a thing I saw. It used to be one for Ian Roberts showing. He's like, I'm going to create a character just now. Create a character. He's an IRA terrorist.
Yeah.
And then it was like, okay, well, ask me any questions. I'll answer them in character. Okay, what do you feel about the British occupation of Ireland?
He's yeah.
like, I hadn't really thought of it. And yeah. like, every answer was, I don't know. But this is his character. And yeah. he's created this whole character who has yeah. no opinions about anything.
Right. Ian Roberts is a great character actor.
Indecisive. Lastly, though, I want to read this last postscript because
sure.
it's kind of wistful.
I can't stop you.
It's sort of wistful.
Okay.
I just started watching Silver Streak on that Netflix On Demand thing.
Oh. Yeah.
It's good. Yeah. Thanks for the tip. Will Ned Beatty ever have a happy ending?
It's true, I guess.
I guess in Network it's implied that he continues his reign as a plutocrat. Yeah. But
I think probably at this point in his career, no is the answer to that.
I mean, what's he done last? The last thing I remember he was playing, he was in
the last thing
Cat
I remember is him in
Roof on
switching
Broadway.
Channels.
That's Oof. Quite a long time ago.
Yeah.
He, you know, he's a great actor who unfortunately yeah. is
got raped early on film, and and that was it for him.
Like, I was like, I can only be a bumbling sidekick in a Superman movie now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The whole world saw you be somebody's bitch, and that is it.
Backwoods people have emasculated my career.
I got typecast as the rape guy.
Yeah. All right, man, we've talked a while, so let's...
I'm sorry.
No, it's sorry, good. It's all happens. Gold.
Oh, good.
It's always like, let's get in and out, people. We got to go home.
Right.
Oh, wait, we've been talking for 40 hours.
So we're thinking of the internet. Videos have to be like 2 seconds long, but podcasts are allowed to be like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah, they go on.
Double standard.
They extend towards
maybe not
the
a
horizon.
While, but they tend to be.
Quickly, sure. To prove that we're not miserable jerks who hate everything, let's do some recommendations of movies that we've seen recently that we liked. And in the interest of going fast, I will say that recently I saw Ghost Town, a movie that was not embraced by audiences while I was in the theater. It has some problems, you know. The script is a little on the nose, but...
I'm in a ghost town. This is a town full of ghosts. Well,
not big enough to be a city, and everyone's dead.
Well, they tried to sell it as like a wacky comedy, and I think that's because Ricky Gervais was the main guy, and they're like, okay, we can't sell it as what it is, which is a romantic comedy, because yeah. no one's going to be like...
Because he's hideously unattractive.
Well, people aren't going to be like, oh, that's the leading man I want to see.
And here's what's wrong with movies today. There used to be a time when your romantic lead could be Gene Wilder or Elliot Gould, mm-hmm. like a normal-looking yeah. person. But now it has to be like Josh Hartnett or
yeah.
George Clooney. It can't be someone who is of average looks.
But I think movies go through phases. Well, first of all, they're always more forgiving to men than women.
That's
true. There's never been a time when a homely woman has been the romantic
except for
lead.
Marty. And the whole point of it was that these are two homely people.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. It's never... It's
and that
always
movie
been,
was like a once-in-a-century occurrence of
yeah.
like talent.
Yeah.
It's only when... yeah, it's always an average guy with a very attractive woman.
But it was a very sweet movie.
Or like modern romance with the Albert Brooks movie. Where it's like... The whole movie, like, it's a really funny movie, but the whole movie, you're like, she's way too pretty for Albert Brooks.
Right.
Come on.
Yeah. Except in real life, like, the millionaire famous Albert Brooks.
Yeah, well, then he can get any woman he wants.
Yeah.
You know?
That's like these guys sit down to write movies. Like, I'm the lead, and I obviously have women swarming all over me because they have done so since I had 1 ounce of fame in this city.
Yeah.
But, it, you know, three good performances. Ricky Gervais, what's his face?
Greg Kinnear.
Greg Kinnear is good in it. Tay Leone, who I think often is a little, I don't know, there's something like sharp or cold about her, but she's very warm in this movie. And it's one of those rare romantic comedies where you're like, oh, I could see these people falling in love. I understand what they have in common other than the fact that the screenwriter has thrown them together.
Yeah.
So I recommend that.
Yeah.
And she puts her face right near like a ghost's penis, right? Or somebody does.
There's that in it.
I saw that in the commercial. I was like, I don't know if I'm going to see this movie.
Yeah.
Because why? How come the other ghosts have clothes but he doesn't?
Well, because people wear what they had on when they died.
That is a dumb rule.
Well, it's
consistent, though. It's enforceable.
Apparently they have ghost cops. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Take that shirt off, buddy. You died in the shower.
Yeah.
You don't get to wear pants.
I'll take any supernatural rules on that's held firmly throughout.
Okay.
I would agree with that.
All right. Well, then I'm outvoted.
Yeah. Well, your vote doesn't
I haven't seen any movies recently. I feel bad. It should be recent,
well, I
right?
I mean, it should be recent, but it can be anything.
I'm going to have to bend the... I saw Scanner Darkly on Netflix streaming, which is some years ago, like 4 years ago or something. But I really liked it. I expected it to be really boring, and I thought it was really cool. That movie kind of went quickly, I think, relatively quickly. I thought it was like... It wasn't great, but it was like smart, like a lot of fun sequences. I guess like a lot of his movies. Linklater, is that he said? Richard Linklater?
And
good stretches of actors kind of being natural and real with each other and not a huge heightening of story.
That's very Linklater, yeah.
And you can finally fulfill your dream of seeing rotoscoped Winona Ryder's breasts.
Yeah.
What?
That's true.
How come I haven't seen this movie?
Yeah. You have a real fetish for cartoon Winona Ryder.
Well, cartoon breasts, really, but, you know.
And the rotoscoping, I thought was good. I think that animation style is cool. I thought it worked for like a weird science fiction style where you want some things to be weird and some things to be natural.
Yeah.
I just want the audience to know I don't really have a thing for cartoon boobs.
I do.
It's too late
now. Oh, okay.
People believe the first thing they hear, Elliot.
Ah, that's why Hitler got along so well for so long. No, don't listen to that guy. He's crazy. Sorry, my mind's made up. I've heard him already.
Yep. That's science.
That was the broadest accent I've ever done for a German.
Not like my Schrader. Hey, you want accents? Your accents are crap. I hadn't heard accents until I was 45.
I've never been out of the country. I'm a French.
Oh, I already am French. Look how French I am. Jeez. Easy. Accents are easy.
Schrader! Yells his name at intervals.
Yeah. It's like self-centered Tourette's.
Well, I'll...
That's weird. That's a mad TV sketch from like 10 years ago, I think. Sorry.
Schrader. Well, it doesn't really offend anybody. It's just kind of... It's out of the ordinary.
The reference is a little obscure for mad TV. I don't know if we're going to...
Oh, they did tons of Schrader sketches.
They were
America's clearinghouse for Schrader sketches.
Oh, because there's so many that needed clearing out.
Yeah.
Well,
at rock
you can't go to
places.
Every college sketch you've got their Schrader. They got their superhero sketch, their zombie
something
sketch, and their Schrader sketch.
You can't just throw them out, Elliot. They've been written.
I guess so. I mean, they don't expire until.
What's your movie, Elliot? Name a movie you like. We're gonna be here for longer than it took Kevin Costner to cast a vote.
I saw on Friday of last week. I saw Coraline, which I enjoyed a lot. That's the new movie with the voices of Dakota Fanning and Terry Hatcher and John Hodgman and some other people who I don't remember.
It looks beautiful. The trailer makes it look.
It's really the animation is fantastic. It's Henry Selick who directed Nightmare Before Christmas.
Ooh.
And I think James and the Giant.
Yeah, James
Peach.
And the Giant Peach.
And it's just he outdoes both of those movies in terms of the animation. Really great, and the figure acting is fantastic, and the design is really cool, and the voice acting, strangely enough, is really good. Like
really?
Usually they hire celebrities, and
so
they're
they
just
can
like,
promote with their
be
name.
Yourself,
right?
You're Eddie Murphy, just Eddie Murphy it up. But John Hodgman actually acts in it, like and gets across this character that doesn't sound like too much like he does in real life.
Mm-hmm.
Terry Hatcher and Dakota Fanning both do a good like acting job of creating the characters that they're doing. And it was just like a real – and it's one of those movies that like there's no pop culture references in it. There's no like song montages set to like 80s hits or something.
It's
like,
not a DreamWorks film.
It's not a dream. It's not Shrek basically.
Yeah.
It's like, and like this is a movie that you can watch 10 years from now or you could have watched it 10 years ago. And it would have been just
well,
as good.
Well, you couldn't have watched it 10 years ago,
I mean, if the movie had existed
no,
10 years ago.
Factually, you're wrong there.
What you're saying is a temporal impossibility.
Okay, well, 10 years from now and then another 10 years on top of that.
And by
okay.
the way, it's Frankenstein's monster.
Ding! So. Why I oughta. You guys.
Well, Will knows what that is. It's a callback.
But it was a really good story told like in this solid way with beautiful animation. And the only caveat that I would give for the mTOR is... I saw it in 3D, and I would recommend not seeing it in 3D. I feel like the images are so beautiful on their own, and there's so much going on in them, and the lighting is so not conducive to 3D in that the images are composed. They're not made for things to jump out at you.
Yeah.
that it really was distracting and not so, and like your brain is working harder to channel the 3D images, and it makes it harder to focus on what's going on. Like, whereas Beowulf was much better in 3D than it would have been out of it, because it's just this fucking guy shoving things in your face and there's a monster and then the camera zooms in. But this, you know, is a movie, so right. it was a lot better.
We're rapidly approaching the limits of what GarageBand can handle in a single audio file. So we should sign off.
Okay. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah,
oh, thanks for coming.
I've been Dan McCoy.
I'm Will Hines.
And I remain Elliot Kalin.
Good night.
Oh, Chatterbox with the last word.
Yeah.
Wait, do you need to know how to describe me?
We could let you introduce yourself to the listening public.
Yeah. I was
do whatever you want.
You have a specific intro that you want.
I'm micromanaging and bailing at the same time. You do whatever you want.
This has got to be perfect. I don't care.
Right, exactly. We cannot screw up. You know what? It doesn't matter.
Let's just play it loosey-goosey. Stay on point.
And three...